by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this program this evening with a long clip from Alex Jones and his concern about what is happening on this impeachment trial and what is the reason why Pelosi is holding it back and what are the problems with what could happen within the trial itself. But let me give you a little background on the little geopolitical quick lesson here is that the wall in Berlin started coming down in November of 1989. Then it commenced to begin a break of the USSR, the Soviet Union, commenced. And what occurred within the country at that time, at the beginning, was that there was a rush by many entrepreneurial future oligarchs to come in and start buying up. They were using a concept of public-private partnerships that this country, the United States, was pushing and advising Russians to go in and form corporations and buy up some of the infrastructure of Russia. So that's what was going on at the time that this the breakup was beginning. And so what commenced was that we started promulgating certain programs to enable the financing of internal oligarchs, which Russians only could own over a majority interest. It took Russian citizens that were only authorized. The law did not allow any outside purchasers. So what happened was there were partnerships formed by American wheeler dealers along with Russian internally to start buying pennies on the dollar, on the ruble, of much of the Russian infrastructure. What happened after that was the oligarchs started buying up large infrastructures of oil and gas and many of the most valuable resources, mining resources and manufacturing resources that Russia had. This built up and built up until Putin comes along. And Putin was wise to this to a degree and much more of a nationalist than his predecessors. And he began to start gaining power and consolidating his power within the newly formed Russia Federation. And when he started consolidating his power, he had meetings, a series of meetings with some of these oligarchs. And he warned them that you throw in with me, you know, play ball with me, you'll be okay. If not, you're going to jail or we're going to get rid of you, deport you. So what happened was there were some oligarchs that wouldn't knuckle under and started resisting his power base. And they got put in prison and prosecuted, and some others were deported. And so then, of course, he comes in with his own investment group and acquires some assets themselves, we believe, at this time. Then what happened after that was that Hillary, along with others on Uranium One, made a deal with the Russians to transfer much of the Uranium One's assets to Russian interest. And today, Uranium One is totally owned 100% by the Russians and controls a large amount of uranium, you could say, mining and sourcing resources throughout the world, which is a big, big economic factor. At one time, Hillary goes over there and they have this reset thing, and she was secretary and all this and so on. But basically, when Putin started reconsolidating Russia's power along more of a nation-state basis, started resisting some of the NATO's intrusions into Eastern Europe so far with missiles they were moving in. And then Putin goes out and takes Crimea and these other things. Well, anyway, what finally blew up was in Ukraine when a duly elected president was removed from office through a series of propagandizing using non-governmental organizations and much of our money. And at this time, around this same time, there were IMF loans and World Bank loans into Ukraine that were stolen from some of the wheeler dealers there operating in the Ukraine. And so what happened next in the Ukraine was that riots and protest movements were started. And what culminated next, or what materialized out of that, was were snipers there in Maidan Square firing on both sides to keep this thing going in early 2014. But what I'm saying is the Obama administration, along with Hillary and others, actually fomented a coup in the Ukraine and called the duly elected president to flee the country, who was friendly to Putin. So they ran out a president and then replaced him with a friendly president, Poroshenko, that was friendly to the West. But involved in all of this Ukraine thing, there's more to it than appears. And what it is there's $5 to $7 billion that was absconded with by many of these players. Glenn Beck right now has the best chalkboard up on some of these mechanizations and manipulations. So go into there, into YouTube, and look at that. We put that up on our site, thesecrettruth.com, before. But so the Ukraine is a key to closing down for the Democrats because of Obama and others' problems, and Clinton's, and they go back to some of these other problems. So the key, what they're doing is trying to close down the Ukraine investigation from going too deep and too far back. The deeper it goes back, the further it goes back, it opens up what happened to these billions of dollars there in the Ukraine. We believe they were stolen by many of these key players. But anyway, coming up next right now is Alex, and he's alerting us to some of the dangers that could arise out of this, you could say, trial of Trump in the Senate. They have a lot of dirt on many of these senators. And so when he gets into the Senate, there's a danger they could vote him out. And I'm not saying that lightly. That's a 20-30% chance, but it could occur. So let's keep our ear to the ground and watch this very closely. But here we go with Alex Jones, and he's warning of some real dangers in the future.
But this broadcast is undoubtedly, up to this point, the most important broadcast I will ever do. And so I'm not someone to get butterflies or choke up, but I am sweating right now, and it's cold in here, because the stakes are so high on this. This isn't some football game where you just lose a bet if your team doesn't perform. We're talking about decades out in the future, being able to shortcut around globalism and unspeakable horrors if we can get nationalist and populist and pro-human candidates into office around the world and roll back the globalist plan. Now, a lot of people have said, oh, they'll never impeach him. And I said, no, they're going to impeach him. Probably fail in the Senate. But they've got a long-shot plan to create a civil emergency to remove the president. And if we don't expose it, it goes from being a long shot to being 50-50. And that's why they're going with this. Even though it's incredibly dangerous to the establishment power structure, they're already in so much trouble. It is a Hail Mary. But you just saw all the Pelosiites there cheering. Oh, they're very solemn. Oh, it hurts America. Oh, they're so upset to be doing this. Oh, they're impartial jurors. But then there they are cheering and saying, we're going to impeach the mother effer. TikTok, we're going to remove you. TikTok, we're going to put you in prison. TikTok, you're going to die. TikTok, we're going to put your family in prison. TikTok, we're going to attack your supporters. The corporate establishment, lapdog media celebrating, the Washington Post celebrating. These are the traitors. These are the sellouts. These are the enemies of the republic. And so there is a program. There is an operation. There is a plan to remove the president within the show trial that the House has already had projected into the Senate, using that as a platform in the media as a show trial to spring a bunch of other scandals, which they're starting to announce. And then the Supreme Court is meant, and all the blackmail they've got on some of those members, like the Chief Justice, to move in and say the Senate has not been impartial and have the Supreme Court make a run at the president in a true judicial coup. This is openly being discussed by Not Long for This World, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's all coming up. The ultimate cliffhanger. America is fighting for her life, but it's in the animated contest of liberty that we will rediscover who we are. America hit bottom in the last few years and now is coming back up towards the top, and we can see the surface together. Sounds melodramatic, but it's not, because it's really happening. It's not hype when it's real. It's not bragging when it's fact. It is where we are now. And once again, America is awakening. The sleeping giant is rising. You can feel the energy. You can feel the power, real power, not satanic power, but the power God put in men to build the future world. All right, let's get right into it. Here is Representative Mike Kelly laying out how high the stakes are, and that this is like Pearl Harbor, except it's more dangerous. It's from within. But if you know about the sneak attack plan, if you know about their operations and how it's going to unfold, they're going to try to make it look like it's real and spontaneous when it's all been scripted. Well, then, when those globalist zeros come in over the metaphorical Pearl Harbor, we're going to be waiting for them. And we are. Here's what he had to say.
There's so many great dates in December, and we talk about the wonderful things that have happened in December in the past. There's also, in addition to Christmas being something we celebrate, the Boston Tea Party took place in December. But also on December 7th, 1941, a horrific act happened in the United States. And it's one that President Roosevelt said, this is a date that will live in infamy. Today, December the 18th, 2019, is another date that will live in infamy. When just because you hate the President of the United States and you can find no other reason other than the fact that you're so blinded by your hate that you can't see straight, that you've decided the only way we can make sure this President doesn't get elected again is to impeach him. On the floor of the People's House, the bastion of democracy and liberty in the whole world, we have decided that political power is far more important than principle. I would urge all members of the House to vote no on impeachment and to look their voters in the eye and remember. Listen, let me tell you, the voters will remember next November what you're doing this December. This is a terrible time. This is a date that will live in infamy.
It is December 19th, 2019, 319 days out from the election, and the Democrats know they're losing. They know there's a global political realignment away from leftist, communist, socialist, corporate, crony capitalist, New World Order, technocrat garbage. The world is awakening to the Chi-Com menace. America is awakening to the CFR, the neocons. And they're all now politically fighting for their lives. Some heads are going to roll. That's a fact. America's not backing down. America was asleep. And now, the abuse we've gone through has only awakened. 319 days out from the 2020 election. 2020, a momentous number. And the political, sociological, economic, spiritual planets are aligning for it. A time of great change. A crossroads. An opportunity to do the right thing. So everybody knows that the deep state's a real thing now. It's out in the open. It uses kidnapped children and sex slaves to compromise people. They're absolutely, totally evil. They've decided to be evil, to have power and control over the earth. And they want to establish a private corporate world government. And they're very, very upset. They're very, very upset that humanity is not going along with it. And so they are going to try what they've done in the past, what other empires have done, to get the little people, the average people, fighting with each other. When you've got a corrupt establishment that has been exposed, that is on its heels, what do? Divide and conquer. Balkanization. The great game is what the British call it. A few thousand British troops could subdue tens of millions of Indians in India by playing different tribes off against each other. And that great game is now used today in the name of multiculturalism, in the name of liberalism. Along comes President Trump and other populists and other nationalists like Boris Johnson and countless others from South America to the UK to the United States to Australia, promoting just what works: free market, loving your nation, the family, good trade deals, not demoralizing your country so it can be absorbed into a global system, not having the communist Chinese world be the model of the planet. A challenge to that authoritarianism, a rediscovery of our moral compass, rediscovery of directing our own destiny as much as possible and not letting other people direct it, taking control of the future, owning it, living it. And so we've seen Russiagate. What do you do to a president who wants to be the president, wants to empower the country and be incredibly popular and cement their name into the future as the gold standard? You say they're a Russian agent. He didn't take any of the bait, blew up in their face. So what do you do? Oh, now he's corrupt with what's happening in Ukraine for exposing their corruption. So here's why they had to do impeachment. They don't want Trump to get another Supreme Court justice. And even if this removal fails, they'll say, we're not going to confirm anybody that was just impeached. We're not going to confirm anybody nominated by a president like that. And the average leftist is so dumb, they think impeachment is conviction. It proves Trump is bad. That's what's being said. And it changes the subject from all the incredible crimes that they've committed and all the bad things they've been up to. But that's not how they remove him. Now, if they can't get that, I'm going to lay this out. They've got other things that they're going to try to do along this path. Now, I have been saying since before this started 3 months ago that they will impeach him in the House. And then when it gets to the Senate, they're going to pull out the stops of blackmail, arm-twisting threats against the senators. And I also said the Supreme Court could then be brought into play to claim that people weren't impartial And that would just create enough of a cloud, like the Democrats did with the election 3 years ago, to create the real civil unrest going into the election year to tear the nation apart, which is what the globalists and the Chi-Coms want, to undermine the nation. That's been their plan all along. And so they are going for broke. They are trying to cause a civil emergency. That's why they're going after the guns in places like Virginia. That's why they're saying, hell yes, we're coming for your AR-15s. Because if they can't beat us politically, they are going to try to trigger an event along racial and along political lines that will tear the country into pieces. Now, it is a big gamble, and it's making the president, if he survives it, even stronger. But they can't help it and have to do it because they're being so politically destroyed by the Jeffrey Epstein information coming out and all of their other corruption coming out and their blue cities collapsing and their alliance with the Chi-Coms and the fentanyl and the chemical warfare against the American people and their alliance with MS-13, God's children, according to Pelosi. And so that's why they're fully committed. Now, here's the big enchilada. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we'll play the clip coming up next segment, says senators can be disqualified from upcoming impeachment trial if they are not impartial. Now, she doesn't have that power. This whole thing is political. She's a political operative, hanging on to life by her fingernails. McConnell said, of course it's political. The whole House thing was political. It was a railroad job. But she's saying that to bring doubt in and to lay the predicate and the foundation for a 25th Amendment challenge to Trump and to a challenge to the Senate proceedings to have the Supreme Court or part of the Supreme Court say it's illegitimate to throw the nation into civil unrest and potentially a hot civil war, which is their plan, their stated plan, because they can't win politically. Again, the ultimate form of balkanization is war, chaos. And there's been excellent articles laying all this out at the Conservative Treehouse, impeachment as a means to an end and not the end itself. This was written in the afternoon yesterday. By this morning, it's all over the news and confirmed that's what's happening. And that they're going to claim that the Senate isn't legitimate if they don't let the Democrats run a one-sided trial of the president just like they did in the House. But they know the public is ignorant of how these rules work, and so they're now having Pelosi say that she's going to withhold sending the articles up, certifying them, so they can just have that out there that, oh, look, Trump is impeached, as if that's a conviction and a way that he is discredited, waiting while they prepare to roll out women saying the president raped them, people saying the president used the N-word, people claiming the president has corruption in his tax returns, and all sorts of other things, and then start saying the Senate is corrupt. They're political, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Democrats say you're not allowed to be, blah, 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 to throw all of this into chaos using the buildup to the trial to further divide the country. And we're going to go through how they then intend to remove the president and their real plan, which they're now executing, and that only exposure of it can stop them. Please stay with us. I'm Alex Jones, NewsWars.com. We are back live, broadcasting worldwide. I am your host, Alex Jones. And InfoWars' very existence is an act of rebellion against the global tyrants. Your support is war. This is information warfare. This is truth, head on, committed to fight lies. This is life and death. That's not melodrama. That's the cost. That's what we face. That's where we are. These people will take everything from us if we don't start standing up for ourselves. All right, let me lay it out. There's different scenarios, really four different ones, two that they'd really like. And when they sit around in their boardrooms, they're like, we could discredit him so that when Ginsburg dies, which should be any week, any month, I mean, nobody lives more than a year with what she's got. She's supposedly already gone past that with pancreatic cancer. She got the best scientist, best doctor. She's hanging on, though. In and out of the emergency room every week. So by discrediting Trump, even with this impeachment, and dumbing down the public that that's a conviction, that's one of the reasons. Further dividing the nation, that's another good reason. Changing the subject from all the crimes they've committed, that's another reason. And contesting into next year that he's an illegitimate person ahead of contesting 2020 if they're not able to steal it. So that's the fourth reason. That's why they're doing it, even if they fail in the first two or the third option. But here's the first option. They create enough blackmail, enough hysteria, enough problems, enough pressure on these senators, enough division with all the other stories they're going to bring up while they're holding the articles from the Senate. Another lawfare tactic. And then the senators start buckling and they vote to remove him. They say for the better of the country, this has just gone on too long. There's too many bad things that have come out. And now this latest thing, even though it's not in the trial, I just have to go against the president. That's what they really want, what they're hoping for. That's the Hail Mary. The other one is that part of the Supreme Court says it's political, it's illegitimate, the Senate's running it wrong. Even though it's all been a kangaroo event so far. And that triggers civil unrest and anger. And they are blackmailing members of Trump's cabinet and the Senate. And then they create a 25th Amendment to the United States event. XXV to the United States Constitution says that if the president becomes unable to do their job, the vice president becomes the president. This could happen for just a little while. The president is just sick or disabled for a short time. It can also happen until the end of the president's term. And they could say that he was mentally incapacitated. So that's the second thing they want. Third thing is civil unrest, violence, breakdown, kills the economy. And that causes enough of a crisis for them to win the election and or get Trump to step down.
I think personally what we should do and what we need to do, but I'm not, you know, confident that this can be done. But between now and, you know, because Pelosi is holding back on delivering, you could say, the articles of impeachment to the Senate, then I think during this period in here of negotiation and so forth, I think I would advise the Senate committees to start investigating some other previous areas concerning Ukraine and other problem areas on their committees, and then doing a reverse shift. So let's do a shift reverse and start calling in who the senators want that can buoyant the case for President Trump. So all of say January could be utilized to hold committees. Delve deep down in there, call in the Bidens, call in the whistleblower, call in the Yovanovitch and others, and start digging into this Ukraine problem. And that can be evidence that can be entered into or not into a trial if and when it takes place. Otherwise, when we get down to the end of January, when they finally begin this trial, then we can either sue for call for a quick dismissal, or if it goes in the full trial, then the danger is even greater that Trump could get voted out. Because the biggest world players in the world, the biggest money in the world, they want Trump totally gone. And so that's what we're up against. We're up against a very dangerous period here. And even Barr and some of these people are well-intentioned, but they have obligations and protections of different things in the past. And so they're not lily white either. And so we've got to, Durham has a fine record. I think Barr has played ball somewhat with other vested interests, large international vested interests in the past. So it's not easy to see. Coming up next is Martha McCallum's talking about Barr interview with Bill Barr. Here we go right now.
Attorney General Bill Barr recently made big headlines for saying that some members of the FBI may have been more than just sloppy, as James Comey said. Barr said it may have been more than that. He said he wanted to know if they had acted in, quote, bad faith when they launched an investigation into the Trump campaign. That and other bold moves have earned him a barrage of criticism from the left, but he doesn't seem to mind. I traveled with the attorney general as he went to Detroit to launch a major new crime-fighting effort in America's cities. And I asked him about those attacks and about the president who was just hours away at the time from impeachment. Here's part one of our conversation. Attorney General Barr, thank you for sitting down with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So by the time this airs this evening, it's expected that the president will be impeached by the House of Representatives of the United States. What do you think about that?
Well, as I've said, it's a constitutional political process that's underway right now, and the Department of Justice isn't part of that. And so it's premature for me to comment on impeachment at this point.
When you listen to the call, do you think that it was perfect, as the president says?
Well, I'm not going to get into, you know, if issues come up later and I have to deal with them, I don't want to, you know, be discussing the facts.
With regard to Ukraine, which obviously is at the center of this, the impeachment push, Rudy Giuliani just got back from Ukraine again. He's still investigating on behalf of the president there, you know, who may have been trying to get at him in 2016. Do you think that's a good idea, that Rudy Giuliani is investigating that in Ukraine?
Well, I'm responsible for the Department of Justice, and obviously I will rely on investigations conducted by the department. I think that's generally the best way to go.
Do you think he's stepping on your turf?
I wouldn't say that, but as I say, I think it's in everyone's interest to allow the Department of Justice to do its work and the other U.S. intelligence agencies.
He said in an interview that he needed to get Marie Yovanovitch out of the way, that she was going to make investigations difficult for everybody. And he firmly believes that there was a Ukraine conspiracy with the DNC against President Trump. Do you have any indication that there was one?
Well, as I've said, I have not looked at all into the, you know, whatever the Ukrainian aspects are of the 2016 election, I have not gotten into them at all. And I don't know whether John Durham has gotten into them. So because that is a matter that is potentially going to be covered by the investigation, I don't want to speculate.
Are you interested in seeing the evidence that Rudy Giuliani has been gathering in Ukraine?
The Department of Justice is interested in seeing all evidence that could be relevant.
Does the DOJ have any plan to investigate Joe Biden or CrowdStrike or Ukraine and the DNC server or Burisma? Are any of those on your radar?
Again, I don't want to speculate about what Durham may or may not get into. I don't know what he is.
But currently, none of those issues are under investigation.
I mean, I couldn't say one way or the other, but you shouldn't read anything into that.
Jim Comey came out after you gave your last interview. You responded to the IG Horowitz's report and spoke out about that. And then he spoke with Chris Wallace, and he said that the 17 mistakes and omissions that were uncovered in the FISA process he attributed it to sloppiness, largely. What do you say to that?
I think there's some of them very hard to square with the idea that these were just mistakes and sloppiness. I have said that a number of these episodes leave open the possibility of inferring bad faith or improper motive, but I hasten to add that, as I've said all along, that I've reached no determination on that, nor do I think a final determination on that is appropriate until all the evidence is in. The Horowitz himself, in his testimony, I think pretty well summed it up, which is this could be, on the one hand, at the very least, gross incompetence. On the other hand, it could also be improper motive. And he was not in a position to make that call. And that's why we have the U.S. Attorney, John Durham, looking into this.
Yeah, and I want to ask you more about that in a moment. Are you surprised that James Comey is so convinced himself that all of this was completely above board? He came out and said there was no treason, there's no spying at all on the president.
Well, I think the IG report and the recent letter from the FISA court, I think, pulls the rug out from under that analysis. There was serious misconduct, as the court itself has said. And one of the things that I object to is the tack being taken by Comey, which is to suggest that people who are criticizing or trying to get to the bottom of the misconduct are somehow attacking the FBI. I think that's nonsense. We're criticizing and concerned about misconduct by a few actors at the top of the FBI, and they should be criticized if they engaged in serious misconduct. That doesn't mean we're criticizing the FBI, and I think the tack of trying to wrap yourself in the institution and say, gee, people who are criticizing the decisions I made are attacking the institution. I notice people don't do that as far as I'm concerned. People feel free to criticize me, and I don't say, gee, you're attacking the honest men and women of the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. I think leaders, you know, have to own their decisions and are fair game if they make bad decisions.
I want you to listen to this piece of his interview with Chris Wallace and get your reaction.
He does not have a factual basis as the Attorney General of the United States to be speculating that agents acted in bad faith. The facts just aren't there. Full stop. That doesn't make it any less consequential, any less important, but that's an irresponsible statement.
He said that you made an irresponsible statement about these FBI individuals.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I made the same statement effectively and substantively as the Inspector General, which is there are unexplained misconduct that are, it just can't be easily explained as to what was going on there. And as he said, it could involve bad motive, and he was not in a position, given the limited scope he has, of making that final determination. So it's not speculation, but you know, I think there are episodes there that are simply cannot be squared with innocent mistakes, and I think people have to come to terms with
that. Were you surprised that he seemed to give himself such a distance from the entire operation?
As a director sitting on top of an organization of 38,000 people, you can't run an investigation that's seven layers below you. You have to leave it to the career professionals to do.
Do you believe that?
No. I think that one of the problems with what happened was precisely that they pulled the investigation up to the executive floors, and it was run and bird-dogged by a very small group of very high-level officials. And the idea that this was seven layers below him is simply not true.
He also said that he told the president three times that he was not the target of the investigation. Do you believe, based on what we know now, that the president was not the target of Crossfire Hurricane or wasn't one of them?
Well, I think effectively the president was being investigated. They were investigating the Trump campaign and Trump associates. But again, as I've said, what happened after the election to me is very questionable. And I think there has to be a lot of focus as to what happened after the campaign. And they learned that their whole case had collapsed and they really had no basis to take it further. And so we are looking into that.
Do you think we need to reform the FISA court system? Some people are even calling for it to be removed because there's no opportunity for the person who's presenting the evidence to have another side make the argument for why this surveillance perhaps should not be done.
No, I don't think we need to do anything that radical. I do, you know, I think both Chris Wray and I take the problems and the misconduct of the past very seriously. And Chris has been particularly proactive in developing a number of reforms that are designed to address that. And I'm evaluating those and considering some additional steps. But I think we can deal with it without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. FISA is a critical tool for protecting the country.
The former FBI director was also CIA director. William Webster also spoke out in the last day or so. He wrote an editorial and then did an interview. And in the editorial, he was very tough on the president. But he also said about you that your charges of bias within the FBI, made without providing any evidence and in direct dispute with the findings of the nonpartisan inspector general, risk inflicting enduring damage on this critically important institution. He said that he's a friend of yours as well, longtime friend. What do you say about that?
Well, I think, you know, Judge Webster was brought in as the FBI director under similar circumstances to sort of clean up previous problems, and he was very tough in doing it. And the Judge Webster I know is focused on getting to the bottom of things so they can be properly addressed. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find out what were the problems and address it going forward. The op-ed piece does make a few references to things that I allegedly said, which I didn't say. In other words, I don't mind being criticized for things I actually say, but I don't like being criticized for things that I didn't say. You know, I have not charged the FBI with political bias. I've said that we, in looking at the conduct of the people who ran this investigation at the very top of the Bureau, it is possible that there was improper motivation, but we have to wait for all the facts to get in.
So the answers to that question are expected to come in John Durham's investigation.
Yes.
Can you update us on that in terms of how that's going or what the time frame is when we can expect to see that report?
Well, he's moving, very diligently. I'm not involved in the day-to-day work of that. I know in just a general sense what they're looking at, and otherwise it's his investigation, and he runs it as he sees fit, and I haven't given him any timelines, and we haven't discussed the timeline as to when he thought it would be complete. But just my general, there were people who expected it to come a week or two after Horowitz's report, and just based on my general knowledge of the things he's looking at and has to look at in the future, I wouldn't think that he'd be in a position for quite a few months.
And it's a criminal investigation. There are criminal investigation elements to it.
Yes.
Do you know if he has spoken with John Brennan or James Clapper, Andrew McCabe? Are they included in that investigation?
I'm actually not following it closely to know who he's talking to at any.
Would you expect that they would be included based on the leadership issues that you've brought up, that you have brought up at the intelligence agencies?
I don't want to speculate about how he's going to take the investigation.
So we really learned a lot about the FISA abuse situation in the Inspector General's report. Do you believe that Durham's investigation is broader scoped in terms of the intelligence agencies that are being looked at?
Oh, yes. He's not just looking at the FBI. He's looking at other agencies and also private and departments and also private actors. And so it's a much broader investigation. And also, he's not just looking at the FISA aspect of it. He is looking at all the conduct, both before and after the election.
So would that include the CIA, NSA?
It would include agencies that could have been involved in this, but we're getting a lot of cooperation from those agencies. You have to remember on something like this, part of the reason you do something like this is to deal with some of the various theories that have been thrown out and either show one way or the other whether they're valid or not. So the fact that you're looking into certain allegations doesn't necessarily mean you give them credence. And I think the media understood that when Bob Mueller was doing his work, and they should bear that in mind when they're watching Durham.
Back as my interview with Attorney General William Barr picks up with how the Trump-Russia probe began. I mean, with regard to, for example, George Papadopoulos or Carter Page, who were reached out to prior to the official beginning of this investigation, do you believe that there's reason to think that their theories are accurate, that intelligence individuals who were connected internationally, you went overseas to talk to some of them about this, that they were dangling these agents in front of them and dangling information about Hillary Clinton in order to get an in into the Trump campaign?
I don't want to say anything that would suggest that I agree or have concluded that there was any dangling or reach out done before July. But Durham, as far as I understand it, is looking into that pre-July period to determine whether or not that narrative got started, the collusion narrative got started before that. There are two questions about the issue of predication. One is, was in fact the comment by Papadopoulos the real predication, or was it a pretext for a pre-existing desire to take a look at the Trump campaign? And he's looking at all of those issues.
That was a sharp, short clip of Martha McCallum's interview with Bill Barr. And basically Barr was saying, well, James Comey's trying to blame this on seven layers down below him. He doesn't agree with that at all. He's not answering questions too much about whether or not John Brennan is being investigated, but it's come out now that yes, there is an active investigation concerning him, and they're actually looking at his communications right now. And coming up next will be a short interview that Tucker had concerning the Brennan angle. Here we go now.
Well, for years after the 2016 election, former Obama CIA chief John Brennan was unambiguous. Interview after interview, he told us the Steele dossier played no role in the CIA's intelligence assessment of Russian interference in the 2016 election. Brennan, by the way, told Congress this under oath. Now the IG report indicates he was lying. Lying. Brennan's statements have attracted the interest of U.S. Attorney John Durham. John Kirku is interested in what he said because he's a former CIA officer and a whistleblower who went to jail for doing less than John Brennan apparently has done. And what about that point, John? Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
But you, as someone whose life was turned completely upside down, was kind of destroyed for a while, see a guy like Brennan just committing perjury in public and nobody cares. How does that make you feel?
That seems to be what we're seeing now. If the New York Times is to be believed, John Brennan was saying one thing on Capitol Hill and on MSNBC, where he's now a paid talking head, and saying another thing internally to his own people and Jim Comey, who was FBI director at the time. So we know that that John Durham, the U.S. attorney in for the state of Connecticut, who's doing this investigation, has now asked for and will receive call logs from John Brennan, emails from John Brennan during the time that he was the CIA director, as well as contemporaneous notes that Brennan took when he was meeting with these other leaders. So what are we looking at here? Are we looking at one of these or many of these process crimes, making a false statement, perjury, conspiracy? That seems to be what John Durham is thinking of. And just a couple of weeks ago, Tucker, John Durham said that his investigation is not an inquiry. It's an investigation, and it's a criminal one.
Brennan would have had to have known this, correct? I mean, he was at the very center of this. For him to say confidently the Steele dossier played no role in the FISA warrants, like, just common sense tells you he would likely have known that to be untrue when he said it.
Absolutely. Just like he would have known that the Steele dossier began as opposition research. But he wasn't honest about that, and neither was Jim Comey. We know that they lied to the FISA court. We know that they lied multiple times to the FISA court in order to renew the warrant against Carter Page. You know, I think that at that level, with everything being classified, and with their arrogance at the same time, I think that they think they can just get away with it, that the truth isn't going to come out at the end. And now it looks like it will come out.
It's, you know, I want to, because I love the country and I spent my life here, I want to believe in our justice system. But, you know, you see Roger Stone facing, in effect, life in prison.
That's right.
Over lying about much less. You see the whistleblower venerated as a Christ figure. You're like a legitimate whistleblower and you went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to sort of wonder, like, actually, is this on the level? I'm sorry to say it.
Well, I was talking about this with my children the other day, and they asked essentially the same question. And I said, you know, when I was growing up, I just always assumed that adults were smarter than kids and that adults were fair because they were adults. and we've all come to realize that that's just simply not true. People have political access to grind. Sometimes karma is a real thing, and sometimes there is justice in the end. Perhaps this will be one of those
times. I think, and I have no inside information, unlike John Brennan. I don't have a top secret security clearance, but I think karma's coming for him.
It's coming.
I think that's right. John, great to see you tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to finish up this evening with Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch, and he explains what they've been up to, filing cases and so forth against Schiff and others. But anyway, this is just a short clip of that. I'll give you a clip off on thesecrettruth.com. Here we go with Tom Fitton.
Hi, everyone. Merry Christmas. It's Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, here with our weekly update here on social media. Thanks for joining us during this important but terrible week for our constitutional republic. The president is lawlessly impeached, and the coup attack continues not only against the president but the United States Senate. I'll give you a briefing on that. Judicial Watch was in court this week on the Clinton email and Benghazi scandals. You wouldn't believe what went on in court. I'll talk to you about that. Plus, we have a new lawsuit challenging the coup cabal. Specifically, we have a lawsuit against Adam Schiff over those phone records he illicitly obtained in his crazed impeachment attack on the president. So I'll give you an update on that. Plus, the FISA courts are finally highlighting the corruption at the FBI. Is it a day late and a dollar short? Well, you might guess what I think about all that. So a lot to talk about. Obviously, the big news first is the unprecedented, abusive impeachment of President Trump by the Pelosi-Schiff coup cabal. And I hate to use the word impeachment because it suggests some constitutionality to the activity that took place, some legitimacy to the activity that took place. This was about as illegitimate an act of Congress as has ever been committed in the history of our nation. You had the House of Representatives impeach the president for doing his job, for trying to figure out whether U.S. aid should flow to Ukraine because of the corruption issues there, and for daring to assert his authority under the Constitution and as a United States citizen to object to overbroad and unconstitutional inquiries into the operations of his White House and his staff by Congress. So according to this impeachment effort, if you ask questions about Joe Biden, you'll get impeached. According to this coup, if you object to to Adam Schiff asking for executive privilege materials and you object, as other presidents have done, you'll get impeached. So this is a completely lawless power grab, and it's an attack that is based on a pretext. So there's really no basis for impeachment. They made it up as they went along. And I'm going to take a step back because you have to put this in the context of the full, the longstanding attack on our nation's institutions and abuses of power by the Obama gang, its allies in Congress, through the Obama administration and well into the presidency of President Trump, which is culminating in this unlawful coup attack on the president. In 2010, the Supreme Court ruled against the McCain-Feingold bill and allowing citizens groups to more fully participate in our nation's public policy debates and election campaigns. Now, the left, which hates the First Amendment, wanted to restrict the ability of Americans to oppose deep state politicians and leftist politicians or establishment and incumbent politicians. So they were outraged. And so contemporaneous with that, you had the rise around that time of the Tea Party. And so what the Obama gang did with their allies in Congress and their leftist allies in the nonprofit community, they began pressuring the IRS to suppress the Tea Party movement and the new groups given new life by the Supreme Court decision. So they tried to get around the Supreme Court decision by having the IRS regulate the heck out of these citizens groups, namely the Tea Party and Republican-oriented groups. They targeted their donors. They sent out harassing questionnaires as these Tea Party groups were trying to follow the law, actually went beyond the standards required under law, and started filing applications with the IRS, and the IRS stalled those applications because they didn't want them to operate against the president, who was then seeking re-election. And on top of that, it was Judicial Watch that uncovered that the FBI, run by Robert Mueller, and the Justice Department were collaborating with Lois Lerner's IRS to think of ways to prosecute the leadership of these very same groups. They wanted to put them in jail. And this was going up until it was discovered in 2013 that this was happening. And in fact, the FBI had gotten the IRS records on, over a million pages or a million files. It doesn't really matter. It was all lawlessly obtained on these citizen groups. And they had to return them after it was exposed by Judicial Watch and Jim Jordan over in Congress. So everyone wondered what happened to the Tea Party in 2012, those of you who remember, because it was this powerful movement in 2010 that helped Republicans take control of Congress, and it disappeared during the 2012 election. Well, it disappeared because the IRS suppressed it under Barack Obama, in league with the FBI and the Justice Department and a host of other federal agencies. So that's how you had an election stolen in plain sight. And so come around to 2016, there were additional challenges. You had Barack Obama, the first president in 100 years to involve himself as directly as he did in the presidential campaign. You had Hillary Clinton, a compromised candidate, who, thanks to Judicial Watch, her email scandal was exposed. Our lawsuit exposed it. Our lawsuits and FOIAs exposed it. It led to pretend criminal investigations, but publicly they were seen as criminal investigations. It led to the exposure at Judicial Watch's lawsuits also, led to the exposure of the play-to-play operation she was running out of the State Department. And contemporaneous with that, you had Donald Trump emerging as the likely candidate for the presidency, and certainly he had it sewed up early in 2016. So what to do? Well, A, you got to protect Hillary. B, you have to target President Trump, or then-candidate Trump. And so the Obama administration embarked on an unprecedented spying operation and intelligence gathering operation and smear operation against the presidential candidate of the party seeking to replace President Obama. You had the spying begin as soon as April 2016, probably earlier than that. According to the IG report, it officially happened, I think it was the end of July. And they sent people to spy on the Trump team. They were recording their conversations. They had, and as the IG noted, and as the Washington Times noted today, yes, they did have spies in the Trump campaign. And then they wanted to escalate it. They weren't getting enough dirt, evidently. So they came up with this FISA fraud scheme, which was used to bamboozle the courts, who were asleep at the switch, and I'll talk about that later. And then you had it transformed into the Mueller operation, that once President Trump was elected, they were completely outraged. They began undermining him, obviously, even after he was elected, but before he took the office. And then after he took office, they continued the smearing and the harassment of the president through the Mueller operation. And that continued to the end of this year, or the early part of this year. And they weren't gaining traction in using the Mueller report because the president was innocent. So they've concocted this Ukraine smear by working with deep state allies in the White House, the State Department, and the CIA, with Democrats in Congress, namely Adam Schiff, to concoct this Ukraine smear against President Trump. So it began this approach, this massive abuse of power, where you had politicians and appointed officials misuse the powers entrusted to them by the American people to target politicians they don't like and try to destroy them.